Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips. Joining me in this adventure into geekdom is Mike the Birdman Dodd.
Yes, it is!
I'm excited Alex. To be here.
Hello, and my connection seems to work, which I say that now, and I'm probably going to disconnect again. And I hear a kitty.
Yes, my cat is complaining because I'm talking. And Aaron Pallier.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, first time on Altered Geek. So, anyways, this episode is going to be about more or less the thoughts of the fallout of post-COVID world on the entertainment industry, whether good or bad. And I figured we could discuss things such as like theaters, drive-ins. I noticed how Patreon's laying people off now. The drops in podcast downloads and subscription services in general, and just kind of the entertainment world, how it's going to have to evolve in a post-COVID world. So I figured it'd be a nice round table anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, because obviously this has dominated the news cycle since, well, it started in January and then obviously picked up steam in the middle of March, and now with multiple states and provinces and pretty much everywhere around the world feeling the effects of it to multiple levels, things are changed. We live in a pandemic that has not been seen, at least in recent memory, for many, many of us, and our lives have changed for different means. It means some of us are social distancing, some of us have been laid off or furloughed, some of us are getting stimulus checks. Things have changed, and that means the world has to adjust accordingly. That means economies have got to change, industries have got to change. Some industries are being changed to produce personal protective equipment, and that's a good thing. But outside of the main thrust of the government's response to it, which in Canada is pretty good, things are still, people are still unfortunately dying in the United States. That's an entirely different political thing, which we won't really get into. The entertainment industry has changed. Several theater chains are worried they may not survive this, such as AMC Theaters is wondering, can they survive this? And we really don't know. Several big entertainment companies, such as Warner Brothers, such as Universal, I don't know whether many others are offering their titles via or early on demand. I know as of this recording, the Warner Brothers feature Scoob, which was going to be released theatrically, is now going to be available via VOD in just a couple of weeks. Universal was the first to lead this charge off with The Invisible Man, Bloodshot, I believe, which I think was Sony did that one, and yep. Disney released Onward via premium VOD, and then it was released via its streaming service Disney Plus a couple of weeks later on April 3rd. So things are changing. One of the big things that come out of the entertainment industry in terms of video games, things have changed hugely. Scalpers are reselling Nintendo Switches for $500-$600 right now, and people are paying it. The Last of Us, which is a video game that was going to be released by Naughty Dog, an entry in the series that people have been looking forward to, was supposed to go gold by now and be in retail stores in May, has now been postponed indefinitely. There's even talk, could the new consoles, the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, are they going to get delayed? It's an uncertain world that we're certainly facing right now. And as Steve alluded to in the intro, how does the world respond to it? Because it's kind of funny. I saw this meme online, and it was this picture of a doomsday prepper, and he's surrounded by food, weapons, and everything else. He's like, I was ready for this. I can survive in this bunker for 10 months. And then it shows him in a bunker. It shows him on like the front steps of some random state capitol. In fact, I think close to where Aaron lives in Lansing, Michigan. And it's like, I want a haircut. I'm like, you stupid bastard. So we live in an interesting world now, and people are adapting using the video conference platform Zoom. As we record this podcast, we're using Discord. Facebook is up. Video games have been recognized by WHO as a great way to relieve boredom and stress, and it's an interesting pandemic world that we're into. So I guess we should probably start things off. How is everybody managing so far? I don't even know how many weeks we're into this right now.
I do. Kind of give,
isn't it like 5 weeks now?
At least. It's more. It was. I was going to go see... Let me look at my calendar because I have. I know exactly when this started because I was going to go see...
You were going to see Bloodshot.
The day that they canceled all theaters and closed everything down.
It was either Bloodshot or My Spy, wasn't it?
It was both. Same day.
Yeah.
So it was the... I was going to go see it Tuesday, the 10th of March. And that's when everything closed. There had been some precautions earlier where people were distancing themselves since about the 5th is when, at least in Canada. I don't know when, like the States, I think came later, but I think it was Thursday or Friday, like the 5th or 6th is when things started. Cause I had taken my mom to go see Onward on Sunday, the 1st. And, you know, within 3 or 4 days, that's when things started to really move fast. And I believe it was the Friday or Saturday, 6th or 7th, is when the news came on. They're like, hey, things are happening real fast. Expect major changes. And it was Monday night. I was like, you know what? I'm going to avoid going to the movie. So I canceled my tickets. And within 6 hours, they said, oh, don't worry. You're going to get your money back anyway because we're closing all theaters.
I think, well, at least in the States, it's been... There hasn't been kind of an overall strategy with how things have been working. But at least for me here in Michigan, I work for Michigan State University in my like real life job. And they closed up shop about a month ago. I think this is week 4 now that we're all supposed to be working from home and, you know, okay. But I don't think the theaters closed when I had to work from home. There was still stuff going on. And then finally they closed it up maybe a week into this, so like 3 weeks ago. So it's been really scattershot, depending on where you are in the States, as far as I know. Of course, I only really know what's happening here and the silliness that was at the Capitol last week. Anyway, yeah.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, we're seeing the news, like we see our own, we also see American news. It's not the same. Like here, I'll give you an example. In Canada, the provinces have a lot of rights of their own, but in general, when the federal government says it's time to close up, it's only a formality that they ask the leaders of each province to comply, because it's sort of expected that they do. And there are powers they can draw, like papers and everything. If they can force the governments in the provinces to shut down if they chose to. They haven't had to. But from what I've seen in the States, there's a lot of powers that the federal government doesn't actually have unless they were to, like, I guess, enact a whole bunch of new laws to basically force the states to shut down.
Yeah. Basically, the states have most of the rights here. Unless it directly contradicts something that the federal government puts out. But as you probably can tell from the news, the U.S. government, the federal government, isn't very useful in all of this. So the states are generally the ones that are calling the shots, and the feds basically change their mind every 4 minutes, so you don't really know what the hell's going on with them anyway. So yeah, each state basically can call the shots up until the point where, the Congress like, decides to do something, or the president.
Like they would have, like, would they have to declare some sort of like wartime measures or something to, or find some old loophole in the law to like take over or something?
I mean, I'm sure there's like 6 or 7 different ways that the federal government can do it. Honestly, you know, I'm not a governmental expert. To be perfectly fair, I know more than most Americans do, which is frightening. But yeah, there's a few ways that they can go about it, but it's whether it would actually work, because it would have to end up being ratified by the Congress, and Congress being the way it is, obviously it's dysfunctional as well.
Yeah. So not to mention, you guys have all those crazy people that join their private militias that would then say, this is it, the government's coming for us.
Well, they say that anyway, no matter what, what's going on. I mean, they're the same groups that talk about chemtrails or 5G networks spreading coronavirus. I mean, there's crazy people in Canada too, I'm sure. So I'm not shitting all over.
There is a bit of a cultural difference in that. Generally here, regardless of if it's the conservative government or it's the liberal government that's in power, when the government says these are actions that have to take place, generally almost everybody agrees with it, just does it.
Yeah, and here it's basically everyone says if they don't agree with the person in charge or if they don't understand the problem, they're just going to rail against it. So here it seems, at least to me, that most people just don't understand the problem, that are the ones that are out there protesting, because it's clear that what they're protesting makes no sense, like to what's going on. It has no basis either in reality, law, or the science of this pandemic.
Yeah, it seems to be, like, from what we see, at least from the media, is that the people protesting are protesting on principle. They're like,
I would just say they're protesting on misinformation, not principle. There's a really good website that deals with American politics in a fairly nonpartisan way, and it's called 538. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's run by a guy named Nate Silver. And back in, I think it's 2012, he basically predicted the U.S. election down to the electoral vote. And he's a big data analysis guy, but the group of people that he works with goes in and really analyzes why things are the way they are. And they do a weekly or biweekly podcast, but yeah, they were covering a lot of this, and they round tabled it and basically came to the conclusion that it's effectively run by misinformation, a lot of these protests. But yeah, we're getting into politics, and I'll start getting hate mail from people.
Okay. Yeah. The idea is just sort of to give perspective, because we have two Canadians and two Americans on here. The other thing is, there are misconceptions in the States about us. For instance, universal health care. While the whole country has universal health care, each province handles it differently.
Yeah.
So there isn't just one governing body from the federal government that handles it. That is a power that's given to the provinces themselves. So in Ontario, where Mike and I live, we have OHIP, the Ontario Health Insurance Program. And that, you know, it's different in each province, which what is covered for each thing. But the general baseline is you never have to pay for a doctor's appointment. You do have to pay for medicine unless you're on disability, welfare, or have a medical plan through work, or under the age of 19, that's covered, and over the age of 65 is covered. And it's very basic, but it covers pretty much anything. So one of the reasons why, you know, not just staying at home and social distancing has helped us, what's also helped us is that people are staying in touch with their doctors. People are generally, on average, healthier because we have regular doctor's appointments. We never have to worry about making a doctor's, payment for anything.
And at least with me, I have to constantly fight to deal with doctors. And I mean, I do foster care. So that's taking care of a child that's been removed from their home because of mistreatment or something like that. You bring them in and you treat them like your child until either their home situation changes for the better and they can go back, or they age out of the system. But since there's this weird scattershot system of healthcare in the U.S., your health insurance that you may personally have is completely different than the health insurance that the child may have, even though the health insurance the child may have may be through the state or through the federal government. But all the restrictions are completely different. So you have to weed your way through a new set of weird guidelines and find doctors or specialists that will
see that child. Certain hospitals only accept certain insurances, sort of thing, too.
Yeah. And certain doctors won't accept a child on that healthcare, but may see a adult on that healthcare, but not because they don't see children. It gets really frustrating.
So it becomes convoluted. But that's why, like, we've seen, you know, the numbers have been released, and yes, in average, the state has about 10 times our population. Just, you know, rounding a little bit. But so you'd figure there would be 10 times the cases. That's not actually the case. We're looking in the 30 to 40 times the cases of people getting it in the States compared to us. And it's not like we're spread out that far. Our population is very dense along the border. That's where most of us live.
About 90% of the population of Canada is within 100 miles of the border. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're in, you know, population centers. Like, for instance, Ontario has, I think it was 14 or 15 million people. The state of New York has about 19 million. The state of New York has 34 times the cases and 34 times the deaths that we have. And that includes Toronto, which is, you know, a metropolitan area of 5.5 million, I believe now. So, you know, it's, you know, you see people giving arguments like, oh, in Canada, you know, it's different because they're all rural. Well, no, it's not the case. So we've handled things differently, but there are misconceptions both ways. So,
sure.
It's good. Basically, that background now is out of the way. So we don't have to get political about it. Just that we are handling things a little differently, but in general, our cultures are similar enough in you know, population geography.
Now, one of the other things to kind of talk about, the swing back to the topic, as we've now extensively covered background, one of the first, I mean, obviously we saw what happened with kind of movie theaters. One of the things that is surprisingly an essential business, according to its governor, Rick DeSantis, I think his name is, for Florida, is the WWE. And at the end of March, beginning of April, WrestleMania, I think it was 36, Alex, was held. Pirate themed, it was in Tampa, to wrestlers beating the hell out of each other to an empty arena. And that was odd, to say the very least. It was two nights of bizarre entertainment. And not long after, or before that, we had baseball was shut down. The NHL was shut down. The NBA, which was kind of funny. There was a guy who was joking about coronavirus, who was licking everything in his locker room, and that didn't end too well for him. Yeah, and then he got a stupid thing. So it's,
if I was an American and I got it from him because I was on his team, I'd sue him.
Actually, he could be legally liable for that under American law. Yeah,
I was gonna say, like, if somebody died, like say a reporter or somebody working there dies because they touched a microphone they licked on purpose, then it's like, well, say goodbye to any money and any future gains you're ever gonna have.
Well, yep, good luck, and it's like, because we were recording in the beginning to mid March, a mini season of the production that I work on, and we were like, I mean, we disinfect anyway in the vocal booth. I mean, we have four stations so that actors can sit there and play the role, but we were disinfecting after every person stepped away from the microphone, and which is just proper etiquette anyway, but we were doing it, you know, to prevent people from getting it, not to say, well, I'm going to lick this and purposely cough on this. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's just, some people just are boneheaded about it. Like, I get it. It is a nuisance, and it's a thing that nobody wants to deal with, but it's kind of the way of life now at this point. So whether you like it or not, it's kind of affected everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and the first things we noticed were obviously like large sporting events and concerts and things like that being shut down. I think where everybody realized it got real was, at least in Canada, when we found out that that Tim Hortons was going to be a drive-through only business. And we're like, what? I mean, we can't even get our coffee in the morning. And that's when all the rural people that live out, you know, middle of nowhere, that maybe thought that it's not going to affect them because they're not near the big cities, went, wait, you mean everywhere in Canada? They're shutting down everything? And it's like, yes, they're shutting down.
Well, I think it got really real here when they started closing down conventions of all kinds. And yeah, like any kind of public gathering, any kind of conferences, any kind of convention. And they're still canceling things. And I mean, majority of things have been canceled through, you know, the later part of the year. But either way, it's still being impacted.
I was going to say that I was telling everybody beforehand that I do World War II reenacting, and all the events that we've been scheduled for the first part of the year have been canceled since we did one event in early March, very early March, and then everything else has been canceled, and all the way through the end of July at this point.
Like, me and Alex obviously do the Nerd News or the Toy Kind of Weekly show, so we started noticing things because PAX East happened at the end of February. I was surprised that happened, but several major exhibitors pulled out, especially when they were promoting major products for an April launch, such as Resident Evil 3, Final Fantasy 7, and I think a few other big developers pulled out. The big notice to me was that event happened, but exhibitors pulled out, but then GDC pulled when Microsoft and I think Activision pulled out, and then they canceled and refunded everybody's hotels. Yeah. And I said to Alex, do not be surprised if Comic-Con gets canceled. And I remember, Alex, this conversation we had, I said, do not be surprised if the Olympics get canned this year.
Well, I said they were going to do one of two things. This is, we were talking back in February, even when this was, I said, this is too many people from too many areas coming here because are going to that event. I said, either they're going to make it closed circuit where it's only the athletes get to compete, and there's not going to be anybody in the audience, or they're going to have to move it. The other thing was, just before they canceled all this stuff, I got notification that they canceled and moved the Anime North, and I had actually just personally pulled out of Toronto Comic Con because they waited to the last second to cancel anything. But a few of the events that I had press passes to got pushed back to October or later.
See, that's the thing is, I wonder how this is going to affect it. Now, looking at Microsoft, they've decided to do some of their conventions or conferences mobile or digital only for the next 2 years, just as a precautionary.
I can see.
Do you see more businesses doing that?
What I could see happening is I could see the conventions going. Here's the thing: they could restrict the amount of people that are coming to them, which will be a factor, obviously. But let's say the building that they were in held 10,000 people, and they sold 10,000 tickets. They may go, we're only going to allow 5,000 people, but we're also going to go to a larger venue that, you know, so people can be spaced out. Or they might section it out, or they might make a lot of these conventions back to what they used to be, trade persons only and media only.
Which that could be interesting.
Well, I wasn't surprised when there was a rumor floating around that E3 2020 was going to be canceled. And it's funny who broke the news. It was a tweet from Devolver Digital, who's a pretty well-known indie developer. And they said, and I quote, "Cancel y'all's E3 hotels and flights." And then I think it was TechCrunch or IO9. It was one of those two outlets reported later that yes, E3 2020 had been canceled. A press release would be issued within a day or 2 days at most later. And it's since come out since then that there is no plan from the ESA to put on some event in June. Now, that being said, I'm going to future predict this. Something will happen in June. There will be either a Nintendo Direct, a State of Play, a Microsoft presentation, because you know what? It costs money to cut together a video and throw it up on YouTube. They got tons of time to do it. All they got to do is bring Phil Spencer or the PlayStation guy or Miyamoto in front of a green screen, talk 15 minutes, hire a team of editors and throw it up online and do it that way. Because I think the E3 that we knew was moving more towards a fan and influencer thing anyway, which I'm not a huge fan of, but we're going to see a shift towards that.
If they do it again, it'll be digital, but I think if they do it again, it'll be press only. Like, and they'll not restrict which press company can go there, but they might not put on the big elaborate events. It might go back to being simple stuff like you're in conference halls, we're going to show off some basic videos, and then the digital experience is where everybody goes to see the elaborate stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. It's going to definitely impact a lot of the conferences and conventions, but as far as, like, say your local comic shops or the movie theaters or any of these local businesses, Do you see it?
There's no chance of them? There's no chance of getting coronavirus from a comic shop because half of them haven't had anybody show up in 5 years to buy anything anyway. As far as movie theaters go, I think when they start to bring people back or when they start to reopen, first of all, there's going to be two things. There's going to be what the rest of the world does, and then there's going to be whatever happens in America. So I'm only going to speak for what's happening in Canada and other places. We're going to introduce things back, businesses back to opening up in stages. So it'll be like the first thing that will happen is every store can open up again, but they're going to have the restricted few people in a store at a time, just like the grocery stores have right now. Then it's going to be, we're going to lift how many people can go into these stores slowly and gradually. And then they'll start opening up things like sporting stadiums and movie theaters. Now, with the movie theaters, what I can see them doing, and they've already sort of talked about it, is most of the screens hold 200 to 300 people. They might slash it and say, we can only have a quarter of that in here at a time. And they'll literally put, because when they were thinking of doing before they were told to shut down, was putting caution tape across every other or every or two chairs and then having one open chair, forcing people to distribute themselves far enough where they're not ever going to be within arm's reach of touching anybody. So I can see that happening where the movie industry is going to be hit pretty hard in the theater industry for the next probably two years or more. They'll be doing that. I think sporting events is the same thing. They may sell only one out of every three or four seats, unless it's an outdoor event where you can spread yourselves out a little better. The only industry right now that hasn't really been hit is NASCAR. And that's because...
Because they're doing all the online racing, which... Because it
turned out almost everybody in NASCAR, not just the drivers, but people on the teams, people in the camera crews, they all seem to have really high-end computer rigs at home with driving simulator software anyway, just that they practice when they're at home. And they were able to basically parlay that into playing digital races.
Yeah, which is kind of astounding. Like, they've got people who act as their kind of pit crews. They've got like commentators doing actual kind of race commentary. Now, there has been some controversy that's happened with it. A fairly prolific guy said something racially insensitive on his Twitch stream. There have been guys who rage quit. It was bad. He got
it's like, ooh, buddy, remember, it's not just your pit crew that can hear you saying that now.
Yeah, they're like, hey, Rick, or I think that was his name. He's like, everybody heard that. And he's like, oh.
Everybody heard you drop an N-bomb live in front of like 2 or 3 million people on like television and online. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, like, no. It got bad. And one of the other businesses that's been affected to kind of go along that line is I'm a guy who watches a lot of esports, and the Call of Duty League would go to various cities in the United States. And this is the first year that the COD League has opened up franchises in different cities like Toronto, Minnesota, Chicago, New York, I think, has a team, LA, etc. And those franchises, you have to buy in at like $20 or $30 million a piece, and they fill venues with thousands of COD fans. That all got thrown out because we are just coming up to the first big invitational of the year, I think, and that's now been thrown into disarray. I think everything is now played online. That's a business that's been affected by this, which I don't know how they're going to recover from this. It's Activision. They'll throw money at it. So
I think at least with my view of this, I think the biggest industry that's going to be hit is obviously the theaters. Mm-hmm. I think theaters have been suffering for years and years and years through for various reasons. You know, you can make an argument that, well, the quality of Hollywood films has been decreasing, and that's dropped box office. You know, people have been going home to watch movies because they have great televisions and sound systems, so you really don't need to go to see movies in the theater anymore. You can make a lot of other arguments. Regardless, I think that this is going to put a really big hurt on even the largest of the theater companies like AMC. I don't see... At least in the U.S., I don't see a lot of these theaters reopening. Or if they do, it's going to be like, well, we'll just open one or two of the screens and then shut everything else down, there just won't be a big demand because, I mean, you can just watch these things at the house anyway. I think somebody mentioned drive-through theaters.
I was going to say the same thing.
That might be a thing. That might be a thing. Because I actually do remember going to see movies in a drive-through when I was very, very young. And that was a neat experience.
I've never been, but
Michigan has a couple of them. Actually, Flint has two drive-in theaters, or did at one point.
Yeah.
We had a whole bunch in Ontario, and I think there's only one left. The one, is it the Mustang still around, Mike?
Burlington? I think so.
The one in Guelph, the Mustang.
I think there's another one near Burlington, and I think there's one in Thorold in St. Catharines, or
and there is one in Guelph where you live. So there's three or four at least, but there used to be a lot more. I've never been. But I had friends that would go even in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they would do.
I spent so much time.
Like a carload was $30, and that was fill the car with people, and you got to see three movies overnight.
Or they do what was Dusk Till Dawn's on weekends, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, like $25.
I'll say that I think the reason those will be successful isn't because, oh, well, you know, we want to go see movies in a movie theater. It's we still want to have a movie theater experience of a sort, but we also want to be able to seal ourselves off in the car so we don't have to breathe the same air as everybody else.
Yeah, and especially with people. Think about it. You turn your radio or whatever to a specific frequency, and that's how you listen to it. But now they're at a point where they broadcast here. I was looking. They broadcast, and you can pick it up with little Bluetooth receivers and things that they hand out. So you could actually connect like your surround sound system in your car. You could have quadraphonic sound if you really wanted to. And then you've got you get that old school experience, and then people are itching to go and do things. So just having it there. And it's
outside. Right? It's outside. So, I mean, in the end, you can sit on the hood of your car. You can get out into the environment at least and not be concerned about being too close to somebody else. And that might be just the thing for the movie industry. Hey, open up a big drive-in. Yeah, it might be kind of old school 1970s tech, but people might pay for that now just to get out.
Well, it'll also maybe force the industry to move forward. Like, it may be 70s tech, but we have, like, locally in my city, we have one of the three, like, there's three big companies that make projectors, Barco, I forget what the other one is, and Christie Digital. Christie Digital is here, and they make, you know, like high-end 3D projectors, all that sort of stuff, and they were experimenting with like laser technology and all this. It would be a reason to make, you know, they can go, okay, now we're going to have to build new tech to broadcast on like a 300-foot screen, and it has to be visible in low light. Like, it could be something that forces innovation too.
It could, and I think that would be good for the movie industry overall. I don't know. I've never been a huge fan when I was a teenager, I loved going to the theater, even though the theater technology at the time was crap. I'm saying like mid-90s, early 90s, right? I remember the summer of 92. That's when Terminator 2 came out, if I remember correctly. I think I went to the theater at least three times a week for an entire summer.
Yep, same here.
But since then, even though the movie technology, like the theater technology, has been getting better and better, seats have been more and more comfortable, it's just been like, well, why do I really need to go see X film? It's not really needed. I don't need to see it. Yeah, there's certain films that are kind of like spectacle films that you do want to see on a big screen. I was telling my wife that, when James Bond finally comes out, I'd love to see that on a big screen because I love watching James Bond on a big screen.
There's something about sitting in a room and sure, you can have audio, I would say now as good, if not better than a theater and than most theaters, unless you're going to see something like an IMAX. But there's something about having your entire field of vision be the screen. I like. So I don't like sitting like super close, like the front row where you have to like lean back, but I am the guy that sits like, you know, I sit a little off center because I don't like sitting directly in the middle, but I like to have it so that I don't see the border of the screen, but I see like just to the edge of what, where all the action would be, because there's just something about seeing it and then when they have like really good bass and feeling it in your chest.
When I went to the theater, I particularly went to the dead center of the theater, and I kind of learned where that was because of Mike Powers when I would go into the Friday night premieres in the IMAX. But no, I mean, I enjoyed the theater, and I enjoyed it more when I was younger and before I had kids. My wife and I used to go a lot. But since having kids, we really haven't gone. I mean, I can count maybe on both hands the amount of times we've gone to the theaters. Most of the time we just wait for it to hit streaming. And honestly, there's nothing I absolutely have to see the minute it hits theaters. And I think that's kind of a detriment because there's so many to choose from nowadays. So the drive-in option actually could be something nice to help kind of break it down to the big films, and then you can see the other ones on all the streaming services. And I don't necessarily know if $20 a month is a movie is going to really pick up, because I myself, I'll just wait till it's free.
Well, I don't, when it comes to paying for it that way, like when they in Canada, they wanted us to pay, I think it was $25 or $29 to do that first rental thing. And I was like, but they're only offering it in 1080p and half the time it's stereo, when for $30 I can buy a 4K Blu-ray that's an HDR with like 7.1 surround. Why would I, you know, the pricing model is off there. If they want people to rent these movies at home, they're going to have to make the price of rental cheaper than it was to go see it in theaters, because when you're going to the theater, you can justify, oh, I'm seeing it on a 200-foot screen with these leather reclining chairs and really good sound, and I'm getting the, you know, curved screen gigantic thing experience, or seeing it in IMAX. Well, when you're at home, you know, they're like, oh, we want you to pay that much. No, I won't pay to watch a movie, to rent a movie, ever more than $5. I'll just never do it, because it can't cost more than it costs when I used to go to the video store and rent a DVD.
Well, and that's the thing, is the cost to rent it for $20 is I could go buy the DVD or the Blu-ray when it's technically quote unquote out of theaters.
Yeah.
So, and I could own it.
And like, if they're charging you $20 for a carload to go see it in the drive-in, the one thing you have to think about too, because you got two small kids, right? Is you don't have to worry about wrangling them. If they're making noise, they're not going to bug anybody in the next seat. You could just tell your kids shut up or whatever, but you're actually, it's like you're watching it privately, but you're in public, which is an interesting idea. So you probably would get your money's worth. Plus, there's nobody to stop you from sneaking in your own snacks when you come to a drive-in and bring your own food. So you could bring whatever food you have, if you have special dietary restrictions and all that. So I could see that being popular. What I think is going to be hit harder than the movie industry, concerts, more than anything.
Oh, actually, yeah. Well, I hadn't thought about
one industry that I thought, and it's something maybe Aaron, you could speak a little bit about too, is I've got a lot of friends in the RPG industry, and they rely on distributors like Diamond to get their books out to people. And with a lot of warehouses shut down right now, you want to play something like D&D? That's not a problem. You can get that from Amazon. You want to play something that's a little bit off the beaten path, like say Star Trek, for example, you might get it through Amazon. You might not. I got some friends in some other companies and they're worried right now. There was a big article came out as of this recording, would have been about 2 weeks ago, talking about people in the RPG industry are wondering, will their companies survive this? And if you want to support people, they're suggesting you go to companies like Drive-Thru RPG and whatnot, which is digital, which is great, but people do want physical as well. So there's a lot of writers, artists, and designers that are out of work right now. And obviously RPGs, you can social distance and still play via Discord or Zoom or Google Hangouts, Skype, etc. That's an industry that I didn't really think of was going to get hit hard.
Okay. So from my experience, I only know things from two companies, and I'm not going to say anything that's, you know, privileged or whatever.
Of course.
But I can say that, there's distributors that have kind of shut down. So it's made physical copies of things difficult to get to, you know, customers. So that means income is obviously, you know, logically speaking, income is going to be more difficult to get for these companies. Therefore, logically speaking, I don't have any firsthand, you know, knowledge of this, but logically speaking, it means that there would be less money available for other projects to pay artists, writers, developers, et cetera, for more products. Okay. That's just, you know, speaking logically. I don't have any firsthand experience with that. All I know is that because the distributors have been down, I know it's been difficult to get some Star Trek books for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I would also recommend going to like Drive-Thru RPG and, you know, buying the PDF and physical copy if you can. And you know what? If the physical copy isn't available, they'll still ship it out when they get it. Do that. Get the PDF, support the company that you want to support, support the game that you want to support, and do your best and understand that these circumstances are, you know, awful, but everyone's doing what they can. And I mean, I know that there's products out there that I've worked on in the past 8 months, and it might be for a company I've worked for before, it might not be, but I don't know when it'll come out. And it's, I would think that it's because of this, but I don't know.
Now, just a quick question here too. I was thinking, like with academia, how is it going to affect universities and colleges? Because is everything going to go purely online forever? Because
you'll see more stuff online that could honestly be online. Because honestly, when I went to college, there was a lot of classes that I would have just preferred were online based on the amount of work or what you could accomplish.
Now, like I took, like when I went to school again, about 6 years ago or so, a lot of the stuff for business was like negotiations classes, things you had to be in the room with somebody to work out. But my brother went to the University of Waterloo for computer science, and so he still gets alumni letters from them, and they said that going forward into next year, they may not have any lectures in the actual school.
So in my experience, obviously, I have said that I worked for Michigan State University. I actually do climate change science. I research climate change. I can speak to MSU at least. And they shut down classes fairly soon after things started getting bad in March. We were still working as employees in our offices up until about a week after that. And then they said, hey guys, just don't come in. You know, we don't want to do that anymore. But up until that point, what the idea was, and I still think it is right now, because I'm technically not a professor, I'm staff, I'm a researcher, that the professors were still told to, do online courses for as much as they could. So to finish out this year, like, all right, we understand that some of your courses are kind of hands-on. Like if you're going to a soils class, you know, you kind of need to study soils with your eyes and hands. So you're drawing a soil sample or taking a soil sample. Can't really do that virtually, right? But do what you can for the students, finish this out and make as much allowance as you can for it. Now, as of next year, well, I don't know. I'd have to talk to my boss, who actually is a professor at the university, but at least with my idea of it right now, it's still going to be, if you can teach it online, do it. Otherwise, we're going to have a physical class, which would make coming to the university kind of weird. Like, why would I want to move to East Lansing?
It would also make me, as let's say I was a prospective student, go, why am I having to pay as much tuition if it's all going to be delivered online?
Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a whole argument there. Same with public schools. Like it's right now, at least in our province in Ontario, the teachers have been on strike off and on pretty much the whole year dealing with the government. And then this happened. We're going to have potentially, because the kids aren't going back to school now.
Same
like,
here.
What do you do? Do you like technically you have to fail everybody because they didn't receive the education required to go on to the next year.
Well, people. Have been pushing online education with that. There is a plan in place with our education minister.
But the problem
is no graduation plan in place.
Yeah, there's even if people have been homeschooling, there's been no testing involved. There's no exams. There's no, like, you've had half a year of no education in most cases.
Okay, so here in Michigan, I at least, you know, there was school up until early March, right? What I have read now that came from the state government is that students that were going to graduate, that they were on course to actually passing their grade or graduating high school, they will still do that. They will still go up the grade. They will still graduate from high school, and that's that, right? But if the student was on course to not passing, you know, okay, we're sorry that you can't try to make up for it in the last 2 months of school, but you were on track to failing, so you're going to be held back. And that kind of sucks.
Well, that creates an issue of, is there enough room for all the students? Because you're going to have basically, you know, at bare minimum, let's say 50% of each grade repeating certain classes or grades entirely.
It's not going to be 50%. The statistics that I saw was that because of this whole, we're going to be on, if you were on track, then you will graduate, means that it was about 90 to 95% of the students would actually graduate and move on, which was actually higher than it normally would be. It seems weird, but
fair enough. Because here we have a different thing. Like, there are certain like provincial mandated exams that you must pass to graduate.
Yes. It's the same here. But they just said, "Hey, look, we understand that this is kind of a crazy situation, and we just can't have these tests." You know, if there was going to be a test, it's just not going to happen.
The only issue there then too is when you're submitting, like, in the States, I know you have a different method. You have your SATs or whatever, right? Here, when you apply to go to university or college, you submit a certain set amount of grades from certain classes. Well, you may not have those grades to submit. They're going to have to change the way they admit students, I think, for the next year.
Yeah, and I don't think that's not going to make much difference in the U.S. just because you can take an SAT or an ACT or the GRE if you've already been in college and you're trying to get into a graduate program. I don't think any of that's going to really make a difference. And if you're in the States, you don't even really have to take an SAT if you've gone to a community college previously and you just have grades from community college, which is kind of like first 2 years. That's actually what I ended up doing. I went to a community college for 2 years, never had to take the SAT. Well, I did.
Our system, it's much more difficult to get into university than that. But yeah, it's interesting how this is affecting that. As far as public parks and that, I get the feeling you're not going to have parks being as full. Like, you might have at the initial start, you have some people that are going to be crazy and think, oh, it's all over, so let's all gather. So, like people were doing in Florida. But I feel like people are going to be more cautious. I think, you know, out of everything that happens here, if, you know, in an ideal situation, everything went back to normal in quotes, not normal as in like it's ever going to really be normal, but as normal as it could be, I think what's going to be much more common is you're going to see a large portion of the population, maybe forever, wearing masks out in public like they do in Asia. Because it's already here. Like, people are doing it anyway, even in areas where there's not, you know,
coronavirus infected.
Yeah. And you're going to see that's going to be a fashion statement now, is people are going to, you know, buy masks to match what they're wearing.
I think that's actually a very good observation. I think the no shaking hands thing, and what are you going to do to greet somebody and not shake their hand? You know, the whole, hey, let's give the Vulcan salute. That works for me for many reasons, you know, but, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to do the elbow bump? What's your choice?
I think a lot of it's going to be bowing. That might come back into play. It'll be bowing. And I honestly, as far as all joking aside, I think bowing, like a formal nod, and perhaps even, you know, like an informal wave will probably become the more common thing to happen.
What I do for mine, obviously, since I don't get out a whole lot, but I talked about this with my wife recently, I do the Wakanda forever as my handshake. And if I want to say bye, I do a dab. So, so I'm lit, as the kids might say.
I've been live long and prospering, everybody. but that it just works for me. It has like double meaning because I'm Jewish, and that's actually, you know, the reason Leonard Nimoy used that symbol was because it's a Jewish letter. It's the representation of a Jewish letter. So you use it in prayer, and you actually use those how your fingers split. You're supposed to cover your eyes. It's so you don't witness the glory of the angels that are coming in during prayer, blah blah blah. It's a really long explanation that I probably won't explain very well.
I remember him saying sure there's somewhere that's how they came up with it, because in that episode where he's with the woman, they had to tape her fingers to do it.
Praying.
I'll say this. I'll say this to that, Aaron. Your response is so much more dignified. I do mine because I'm an idiot who pretends to be funny. And Al's going to attest to this. I'm a moron, but I just like to be like, I'm going to dab, eat, and I just dabbed right now.
But like I said, in all seriousness, I think bowing will become a more common thing to happen, or maybe not like a full on like you know Japanese bow, or like where they have the certain etiquette they have to follow about how long it's supposed to be and so on and so forth. But I could see some sort of formal, you know, body movement being the greeting.
Flossing.
Yes. Oh my God! Please.
No.
But you're right. Yeah, bowing or nodding. That makes a lot of sense.
Now, I wonder,
long and prosper. Yeah.
But I wonder how it's going to affect things like I mentioned briefly concerts. And for most concerts, you are shoulder to shoulder. So, I think that the they're going to have to find ways to make more money, and they can't just charge more for the tickets. I think they're going to have their concerts are going to be more and more outside. Sorry, I think you're going to find less concerts in concert halls, and they're going to be more outdoor events.
Well, one of the big concerts that got canceled this year was Coachella. That's huge, because can you imagine if there was a flare-up at Coachella?
Well, you're thinking the States. Think bigger. Think Europe. Think those metal concerts like Wacken or any of the ones that happened in Germany. Like, they're getting like 50,000-100,000 people to show up over the course of like 5 or 6 days at these big European festivals. Like, it's going to be, that's over. They're never going to have them again. Like, it just won't happen. And then you've got, like, because think about, the reason I'm saying metal concerts is the hygiene isn't always the greatest of them anyway. You know what I mean?
Thrashing. You know, everybody's slamming against each other. And
yeah, you've got that aspect. You've got the aspect of their, like, here's the question that nobody's asked, Mike. What's going to happen to the gathering? What's going to happen to all the juggalos?
I was just thinking about juggalos.
I'm sorry, but pouring Faygo on yourself isn't going to get rid of the virus.
Would somebody think of the juggalos? Steve, can you please call the episode this? Will someone please think of the juggalos?
Think about, okay.
Whoop, whoop.
That, I was gonna say, like, that should be your greeting. Is whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
Those crazy clown people.
Wow. Sorry.
I love juggalos. Yeah, like, they're so interesting.
I think it's going to affect even smaller things too. You might not have as many, you know, little carnivals show up here and there, state fairs. Like, there's going to be a lot of things that change up in the next year or two. And, you know, for everybody that thinks it's going to go back to 100% normal, there's going to be some hefty restrictions done, and it will probably be state by state. And in Canada, it'll be province by province. But overall, I think a lot of the open market type events aren't going to be around the same way. I think for a lot of these businesses that might have had, you know, their big whole thing was going to conventions, they're probably going to have to start changing things up. Like, oh, it's going to be a lot more digital conventions. Like, or where I think they just pushed back the Blues Festival in Kitchener here. Some of it, I'm not 100% sure. They haven't canceled it completely, but some people have said they're not showing up because they're from the States and they can't. To give a bit of context. To give some context, the Blues Festival here draws a couple hundred thousand people. Like, they had like Buddy Guy and some other people that were like top tier, you know, traditional blues artists. It's actually worldwide known, and the city would be just like, our city has the region has about 500,000 people, but we would get about 100,000 tourists for the Blues Festival, and so there's talk that they're like, well, we're just going to push it back a little bit, and we're not going to announce that it's canceled. It's like, it happens in like a month and a half. It's not happening.
Like the one thing that I grew up doing, I would go every year, every summer to Oshkosh, to the big air show in Wisconsin. And that's an event they haven't really talked about what's going to happen with that this year. And you think, oh, an air show, well, that's a couple thousand people. No, Oshkosh is routinely 600,000 people. It is insane. The whole region around Oshkosh, like three quarters of their income for the year comes from the week of Oshkosh. It's it's that much.
Is it like the Kentucky Derby in the amount of numbers of people sort of thing?
I mean, well, 600,000. And it's all around an airport, like a single airport. And it's not a big airport, but it does become like the world's most busy airport for that week. There are so many planes going up. The military comes in. Like when I was growing up, the Soviet Air Force flew in at one point and they had a big show. It's insane. And it's wall-to-wall people for 3 miles worth of airstrip that bends around two different ways. It's insane. There's no way that it can happen. No way. And that means this whole area, this Fox River Valley of Wisconsin, is just going to be wrecked because of this one thing.
Well, Toronto's already they haven't officially canceled, but the talk is they're canceling the CNE, the Canadian National Exhibition, which there's an excess of multiple millions of people that attend per year. So that's done. Like, they're not going to run that, but they're not officially saying that. Because they're trying to stagger out the amount of things that they cancel because they don't want it to hit the economy worse than it already has. But like, it's the biggest festival / I guess, you know, provincial fair in Canada. It's not going to be run. There's a lot of other like car shows, things. I think what you're going to see more of is digital. Like, let's say there's all these vendors that made a whole lot of money on, you know, off these events. You're probably going to get these like virtual tours where it's like, here's your thing where you can sell, and it basically would let you buy stuff from a virtual tour of, you know, how it would be set up. There's going to be, I think, Etsy and websites like that are going to be on the rise even more now, because a lot of these individual sort of niche sort of businesses can't really run their main business, which is going on the weekends to these events. So I think there's going to be an uptick significantly on like individual small businesses online.
Yeah, the other thing with that is I don't know how that's going to affect, for instance, like subscription models of things like Patreon or just people funding not only the individual creators through something like Patreon or through Patreon, but also like streaming services in general.
Yeah, and like video games industry right now has been affected because it's still for the most part primarily a physical media industry, and that's what people were sort of expecting. I didn't realize until very recently, because of all this, that how bad the American infrastructure is for high speed. Because I've had gigabit now 3 or 4 years. Like, we got high speed internet when I was a kid in like 1998 or 1999, and we had, I think it was 6 megabit internet then, you know, when dial up was still popular. I didn't realize that there's a lot of my friends in the States that still have 1 or 2 megabit total now. And I'm like, what? How is that even possible? Like, that's the fastest it goes in our city. And I'm like, it's the fastest it goes. Like, and I'm not in like, again, a super huge city, but we've had gigabit, at least for businesses here, for about 10, 15 years. So, and then I do some research online. I'm like, oh, most of Canada has at least a minimum of 20 or 30 megabit internet that's available in some format or another, unless you're way out in the boonies. So this might force the industry to move, you know, telecommunications to finally replace and upgrade their lines, because if people aren't going to be buying physical media for a lot of different things, and they're going to be relying on streaming services for gaming, for basically all their media consumption, they just don't have the infrastructure to handle it in the States.
Now, do you think that the high-speed internet company should be more of a utility over
being... Absolutely.
Yeah. It's
a necessity now. It's not just a luxury. It's something everyone needs.
It was brought up here to make it... there were a couple options. The talk was to make it that it's just a require, it's a right to have internet. And what that would mean is anywhere in any municipality, public city would have, you'd have access to Wi-Fi at a bare minimum speed without any barriers, meaning you don't have to sign up, you don't have to be a citizen, you don't have to do anything, you just can connect. That went to, you know, it went to get ratified, and then Rogers and Bell shut it down, which are Rogers being the biggest cable company in Canada that basically bought out all the video stores, also bought up 50% of our television stations and movie companies, and they're generally pretty evil. I just happen to have their internet too, though. and then Bell being the oldest telephone company in the world. And they own basically all the DSL lines, and now they're getting a monopoly on fiber. They didn't want it because that would mean that they would have less customers potentially. I guess it was their reason for it. They wanted more control over it. They had to make some concessions, though. When they turned down that bill, they had to make it so that they allowed reselling of their lines at cheaper rates. So that's why we have about 10 or 15 different companies. They use their lines, but you get a cheaper rate, which is funny. You can have internet from a third party going through Rogers that's cheaper than Rogers will give it to you personally because the government mandates it. So whatever. But certain cities, the city of Guelph, Mike, where you live in, has Wi-Fi anywhere in the downtown area for free. So even if you're homeless and you happen to have, you know, an old phone or a tablet device that was donated or you got it from a thrift store, you can have the internet. And you can plug in at public charging stations. Our city is like that here too, but it's not perfect. There was talk because Google moved its headquarters in Canada to where I live. Google wanted to give away Wi-Fi internet and give away fiber internet for free to any citizen that lived here. And that was shut down by Rogers and Bell as well, because they said it would be pushing them out of the city. And they're like, no, we're going to give you the option to have either. And they're like, no. So it's been contentious, but that is the eventual goal, is to have a bare minimum. It won't be gigabit for everybody, but the idea would be somewhere in the realm of 1 to 1.5 megabit internet, just to get your email so you can make phone calls, you can do video chat, the bare minimum so that you could do business or work. Because reality is, if you don't have the internet, you can't really do anything. So I don't know if that would work in the States, but it might still, with all this going on, push the telecommunications industry to push for higher bandwidth and just basically more throughput, because I'm imagining that whatever systems they have in place are being hammered with traffic right now.
Yeah, I know working from home right now, it's not the greatest or the most fun as far as having to access servers or upload or download things, because I'm primarily dealing with media and decently large files. It's not the most fun to have to deal with the internet.
Well, the big thing is
being slower than what, yeah, you know, I pay for a decent amount, but it's still
I'll give a bit of background. Like I signed up for a 2-year business plan when they had a deal last year, the only reason I'm with Rogers, but I pay $79 a month. So Canadian. So that's what, 59 American. For gigabit. So I get 1,000 meg down, but it's only 50 meg up, which is where I'm feeling it now when I'm working remotely and sending, you know, large data files. So that means I uploaded about 4 to 5 megabytes per second. I can download at 110. So, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking that is still, you know, that disparity in upload speed has always been there for the residential and even most business lines. So if you have in the States, let's say a 5 meg down, you might only get like 0.5 meg up, which is what makes the, you know, streaming or copying data or uploading to like Google Drive for sharing business work hard. When I worked at a tech company that did GPS data and a bunch of stuff, now we had gigabit down and up, which was hilarious that we could like, we would have, let's say, the Google Cloud, and we could send like 5 gigs of data and it'd be up there in like a minute or less, which was hilarious. But, you know, that's for business lines. We need to improve the speed of simultaneous up down for internet. Otherwise, if we get hit with another pandemic like this, we'll be
it's going to cripple the entire infrastructure.
Yeah. And you basically all the cracks that had been there for years and people had warned about in every industry, you know, not just tech industry, but from everything, from even the healthcare system in the States, education to transportation to everything. Everything that might have had little hairline fractures, now the water is seeping through. And, you know, if things aren't fixed this time around, if they fix it now and go, okay, hey, great, you know, the pandemic's over. If they just ignore this and keep moving forward the way that they've always done it, the next time the dam's going to burst.
Yep, and I totally.
That's all I got to say. Anybody else?
Crickets.
I like computers.
Did your computer stop working, Michael? Because I saw your.
I understood some of those words. No, it's like, obviously it's an essential service. We need it. And, I hope things, I hope and pray for good things to happen. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm trying to think of any other entertainment industries that are maybe affected by this. I know, some of my
podcasting has been affected.
Okay. How so?
It's twofold. There's the downside that overall listening has gone down, unless it's something COVID related or fiction. The fiction podcasts have picked up massively.
I've even seen that there's been a percentage of decrease in our listeners, but then certain episodes get a lot more. So it's like, what?
It kind of depends. But also because everyone is at home and nobody has anything better to do. And everybody has all this equipment they bought anyway for work or otherwise, or communicating with family or whatever. Apple had released that they'd surpassed the 1 million podcast mark. And it said that, what is it? I don't know if anybody's familiar with Daniel J. Lewis. He's a well-renowned award-winning podcast or whatever. But anyway,
the actor Daniel Day-Lewis, is that what you said?
Daniel J. Lewis. He's a podcaster.
No, I have no idea who that is.
Anyways, I've followed him on. I follow a lot of the old timers of podcasters. Anyways, he's had this this pet project that he was doing of calculating it. And anyways, he had a contest. Recently, it was about 2 months ago, I think he put this out, saying, you know, you win a free service or something that he provides if you can guess the date that Apple surpasses 1 million podcasts. And at the time that I guessed it, I think they had 860 something. And I guessed that it was April 17th and I won. And I was just kind of like, that looks like a solid number. but I guess because of COVID, even more podcasts launched than normal. I guess during the normal 30-day period, 50,000 podcasts launch every 30 days. During the last 30 days, they'd welcomed more than 82,000 new podcasts. By comparison, that's quite a bit.
And out of those, five of them will be celebrities that get millions of listens, and everybody else will fizzle out.
Well, about 50% of those are probably celebrities, but like, for instance, there's a Star Trek Voyager review podcast with Robert Duncan McNeil and Garrett Wang.
Yeah, that I'm looking forward to, actually.
Yeah, so that one I'm actually looking forward to, just because it's two guys that were actually on the set talking about it. So a lot of them are just doing it because, one, there's nothing else to do. Two, like, a lot of the TV hosts are doing it, or news anchors, or people that have just something in general that they want to do, but they have no outlet otherwise.
Well, now it's sort of cool because they all the late night shows are basically video podcasts that they're doing. And what I love is it shows how bad at tech that they are. Like, I'm like, oh, you mean our videos and our audio sounds better than theirs? Because they've never had to do anything like this on their own. They've always had a crew miking them up and doing everything. So it's kind of humbling and humanizing to a lot of the late night hosts. So I feel like that's made people go, hey, if they're able to do that with just a webcam and a microphone, maybe I can do it too.
And it's that's the funniest thing in the world to me is seeing all this play out. This guy Evo Terra, he says he had said something a couple weeks ago about podcasters, you know, more or less are still going to be around, but these broadcasters that are trying to make it look as amateur as possible, more or less to try and make podcasters look bad. He says, don't worry, they'll get out of the lane soon enough.
Because there's no reason for them to look that bad, because just look at Joe Rogan's. Like, the dude has broadcast quality. Like, you could put that on regular TV and it would look fine. Why is it that his cheapy podcast looks better than something that like CBS is putting out? Like, it doesn't make any sense unless they're purposely not providing the right amount of hardware, or you know, it makes it funny to me if it's a matter of the internet at, you know, this celebrity that's worth $100 million home isn't good enough to stream it better quality. Because you would figure that when they're recording it locally and sending the files over, but it seems like they're streaming it to somebody across the country who is then trying to edit it on the fly.
There is one show that looks particularly bad, and I watched the John Oliver show weekly, and he highlighted the Wendy Williams show this past week.
Yeah.
My God, this is a woman who obviously has money. She has a production team, et cetera, et cetera. Her show looks atrocious.
You know what it looks like? It looks like a live – remember when internet television was a thing on like
– oh, I'm talking
before Justin TV, before the streaming, when they were trying – it looks like a real media video file streaming at 12 frames per second.
What's funny is this guy Evo Terra that I follow, he does like various tidbit like 10-minute podcasts and stuff. He says broadcasters recording from home have lost their professional sheen and are encroaching into podcasters' claimed authentic space. He says, since we mastered at home production years ago, does this make podcasters the new professionals?
Well, I love that out of all of them, Conan O'Brien looks the same, because you can't, he has one of those faces where no matter how much makeup you put on, he looks the same. So his show, I've tried, is actually watchable. It's still like good, because you can really tell who needs a lot of writers and needs an audience just to be funny and who doesn't. And
you mean like all the late night show hosts?
Yeah, except for Conan. His show is actually legitimately funny still. When I was like, whoa, how is it? Oh, because he's actually funny. Not because
he's actually been a writer on Saturday Night Live and other shows.
Yeah, and like The Simpsons and like Roseanne and other things. So like you have somebody who actually has experience and is okay with just clowning around with his friend online. So, you know, that's cool. But that Wendy Williams one, it really, it feels like watching a live stream cam from way back. The only other industry I can think of, like, to round out how the media has been affected is, and this is something that Birdman can attest to, we talked about it on our show a few times with some of the news articles that come out. The only industry that's booming in all this is the adult industry.
Actually, yeah, I was about to say, like, because a lot of performers do stuff on Cam Soda and Chatterbait and Pornhub, and now OnlyFans has opened up as an avenue. A lot of these adult performers, they can do stuff at home, and a lot of adult companies such as Pornhub have really stepped up to the plate. I know when Italy was experiencing super high unfortunate death tolls, they were opening Pornhub premium memberships up to the entire country, saying, you know what, we've realized times are tough, everybody is stressed out right now, this is our small way to contribute back. And I know there was, I think Pornhub donated a lot of PPE equipment to New York when things are really bad.
And regardless of whether or not you're somebody who agrees that that you think the porn industry is good for, or it's healthy, or it's against, or you're against it because you're have a different set of morals, blah, blah, blah. What you can say about them is
they're innovative.
They're innovative. They've pushed the industries forward. They do a lot of charity work, regardless of whether or not you'd ever consume their content. But the big thing is they were the most prepared industry for this happening, because the whole idea of video streaming on the internet was pioneered by that industry in the 90s. So when you talk about, you know, high quality internet, like, a lot of these performers have dedicated pipelines. They're paying like $1,000 a month to have dedicated up down speeds to their home. So they have the infrastructure to have super high speed data rates for their home use. They have high end $4,000 or $5,000 in some cases prosumer cameras hooked up. They have an editing suite on their own. They were already broadcasting in, you know, up to VR, even sometimes, or 4K. They're an industry that has all the equipment that, you know, they were either frowned upon or you know, joked upon by the regular media industry, and they're more prepared with better technology than CBS, NBC, ABC.
I have something to add to this, because I watch a lot of like Vegas kind of vlogs or Vegas podcasts I listen to. And it turns out like the adult industry in Vegas is both benefiting and is hurting because of it. And the hurt is that obviously in-person type things are not going to be a thing for a while. So they were talking about how, you know, the brothels and things were actually going to be shut down for a while. But they said the online stuff, the streaming stuff, is booming. And a lot of the sex workers are actually doing online sex work now and trying to expand their business that way. It's very strange that this was a big part of this normal casino type broadcast that I listen to. And all of a sudden there's 15 minutes on how these sex workers are actually kind of innovating in that regard.
Because I wouldn't be surprised if the regular media industry ends up looking at what they're doing to upgrading their systems in the future, because interestingly enough, like, you'd think it was YouTube and other streaming platforms that pushed to use different video codecs and higher efficiency codecs for streaming and decoding and video encoding and everything, but it's actually been the porn industry that's pushed it forward every time to get get the highest quality with the smallest amount of data used. So they're even pioneering future tech that is now being adopted by YouTube in future videos. So it's funny how that industry, you know, is the industry that is probably the most well equipped to handle this sort of situation. And there are people I saw, it was actually on global TV here on the news, they were talking about it. They interviewed a few people that were, you know, experts on this, and they said that a lot of people around the world, you know, don't have access to therapists or can't afford therapy or, you know, to see a psychologist. And in some cases, this becomes like going to these digital sites for that becomes their only, you know, release or something that helps their mental health, just by, you know, accessing the sex workers for either paying for sessions or seeing them. It can actually be cheaper than going to see a psychologist. And I was like, oh, I never thought of that it could actually be just something. In some cases, they're just people craving for, you know, some sort of connection with somebody. And that it's like, oh, so that's just, to me, is kind of funny. And how, you know, moving forward, I feel like once all this clears up, that industry is not going to really change much, except for, like you said, opening back up, you know, the Nevada, the brothels and things. But I think it's actually going to change that. Maybe some people that had, you know, there's the social stigma. It's like, oh, you go to those sites, that might shift on people, and it might become a little more in the, you know, normal, okay, you know, realm for them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what are some things, before we close it out, that you see being benefited by having this whole thing go on?
Well, one of the things I see is speaking specifically from experience, I see a lot of digital video games being a big boon, because the industry's been moving towards kind of digital anyway. So I don't see this as too big a deal, because like, hell, there's even an Xbox One. There's an Xbox One model that doesn't have a disc drive. It's purely digital. So that was a move anyway. I don't know how successful it was. But a lot of publishers are offering digital downloads of their games at significant discounts right now. And I'm hoping some bigger releases will just go, well, we'll ship the digital now and people who want physical can get it later, because obviously later on this year, we're going to have a big release of Cyberpunk 2077. And if that release goes ahead, I will be surprised, because money.
I still think it will, because they also own that GOG website. They have their own distribution platform for PC. But I have my old roommate messaged me asking me if the Xbox all digital edition thing was worth getting. And I'm like, why? He's like, because he was thinking of getting, his work was offering him Game Pass, like some sort of promotion from his work. It's like, while you're at home, you can have this. It was like 3 months worth of Game Pass Ultimate. And I went, well, yeah, because regularly that would be about 60, 70 bucks to get that. And he goes, okay, he found online, from a store that would actually ship it to him, a used Xbox One S all digital for $180. And he's like, I'll get that just to play. So I think that those of us that, even myself, I was like, I don't want to get all digital games or just do streaming. I think we're all going to be, this is actually going to force the industries to move to a digital platform for most of these things, unless you're collectors.
Yeah, like, I really want to see the digital become more successful and people just accept it, because honestly, for me, from an accessibility standpoint, it's fantastic. It means I don't have to bug my wife to put a disc into a console. I can access it like that. From the RPG side, I think because digital publishing has been very successful anyway, you see people doing stuff on D&D Beyond through the open game license, through drive-through RPG, etc. I see this as a boon for authors to take a chance. I know when we spoke with Aaron a little while ago during our interview, he offered the suggestion of, if you're passionate about something, take a risk, write something that you know and love and see what happens. Maybe this will open the door to more authors to get published, and there's wonderful opportunities there. I mean, if you're willing to take a risk, if you have that opportunity afforded to you, then absolutely take the time to do so. And as you mentioned, Alex, I think the adult industry stands at a very interesting time to do some great things and hopefully show other industries potentially how it's done. And I think the adult performers that are doing, frankly, what's a public service, because I know a few adult entertainers who act as a therapist. There was one tweet I read last week as of this recording saying, you know what, one of my regulars just said he's had a really bad day. I was willing to do not non-sexy talk with him, and I crave that human contact, and that really, really, really helped. So I'm hoping that despite all the terrible things that are happening right now, I'm hoping we can emerge as better people, as a better society. I've often said on my Facebook, if we ever stand at a point in history to tear the old system down, now is that time. And I hope something good can come out of this terrible, terrible thing.
It'd be nice to go and actually be able to hug people again. I never thought that that would be something I would miss, was like going to a friend or family to just give them a hug. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, because I miss hanging out with you, because it's weird not seeing you like once a week. Like, I haven't seen you in almost 2 months now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's weird.
Because we planned this like ahead of time. We were like, that's just, we were actually going to meet up. And then it was your sister-in-law's like, no.
Yeah.
and then I said, really? And I talked to my brother, and he told me, I forgot that he works at Google. And the second week of February, Google said, stay home. This is getting bad internationally. It's going to hit us soon. And he hasn't been to work since the second week of February. But, you know, obviously he's a programmer. He can work from home. But he's literally been my only contact outside of having to get necessities like groceries pretty much since that started. Because he'll be like, he'll come in and visit like once or twice a week, help me get some groceries, and that's about it. But yeah, seriously, I don't mean like, hey, the virus is over, I'm going to go hug everybody I can see. But just, you don't realize how much you're going to miss human contact even if you weren't participating.
Until you don't have it.
Until you don't have the ability to do it.
I mean, one of the things I haven't mentioned in this podcast, but because my wife, Blair, does the majority of the shopping for our household, we practice a limited form of social distancing ourselves. Like, we don't hug very often just because you never know, because I have a compromised immune system and so does she. And all it takes is one mistake. So we are extremely careful. I'm looking forward to the time when I don't have to worry about that. And let's be honest, it's going to be a while till there's a workable vaccine or some kind of inoculation of some kind.
I'm operating,
things return to normal.
Yeah. Like, my final thoughts are, I'm operating under the belief that I probably already have it, and that I operate under the belief that I've probably already got it. I've probably already been through it when I had, you know, whatever symptoms I had, like regular like flu season symptoms back in February. It's a possibility that I've already had something, and that I just got to make sure I don't contact anybody to give it to them, right? So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that none of us have any issues with it, but like, it's, I'm not so concerned about us. I'm more concerned about my parents are in their 60s. I still have grandparents that are in their 80s. It's like, I can't really see or talk to them. Like, we had to cancel all of our family events. We couldn't do Easter or anything because it's just like, you know, I love you, grandma, but I don't want to kill you. So, I can see, as soon as this starts to lift and you know, everything gets a little nicer, I can see people still being, you know, a little distant when it comes to going out in public, but I can see families doing things like picnics more often, getting out of the house more often, whether it be, you know, in someplace really public or even just, you know, visiting some family for a barbecue might happen. You might have more instances of like cookouts happening again.
Think that's probably a good observation, a good thought. Yeah, lots of outdoor activities I can see. I mean, that's what we have to do right now. That's what my wife and I are doing. And you know, on Friday we actually have a girl coming to live with us now permanently. And you know, she's 15, but you know, she can't just stay in the house all the time. You can't ask a 15-year-old to just sit around and read a book all day, but you know, got to figure out different kinds of activities that you can do outside, maybe not in big groups, but you know, at least with the family group, and then hopefully not expose your still living elderly relatives to any kind of danger.
See, I'm already kind of social distancing anyway from my family because they all live in Michigan and I live in Colorado. So in that instance, it's not much different for me for family purposes, but for getting out and actually getting to talk to people and hang out with people that I know or that I work with, or just plain go back to work, for things that I may need, or, things that would be much easier in person than digitally. I do long for the day that we can actually be in public again and not have to worry about do they have it, do they have it. As much, I mean, obviously cleanliness is still something that some people lack. I went to the store and the other day, and there was people that smelled like they'd been walking around a convention for 3 weeks, and
you see, now this is just me, but again, I might be snarky and say, oh, I didn't realize that there was a shortage of soap as well as toilet paper. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that we're dealing with an Irish spring famine. Like,
well, people used up all the or took all the liquid soap, but there was still plenty of bar soap. Or Dawn dish soap. So, I mean, worst came to worst. But anyways, no, I don't know. It was just, I don't know. I think some people are trying to pretend like this isn't happening. And then some people kind of obviously know that nothing's going to be the same after this. But either way, I'm looking forward to the day when you can actually go to a store, you can actually go look around, you can, you know, be around people and talk to them. So anything else you guys like to say before we sign off here?
Whoop whoop. I will say
that was so weak.
That is how
fucking magnets, how do they work?
That is how the isolation has got to me. I'm now an unofficial Juggalo. Oh my god, I should actually put Juggalo makeup on and just do that for you guys. I think
good lord, that'd be terrifying.
You should change your profile picture to that temporarily.
I really should. I think I might. Hey Blair, I'm gonna be a Juggalo.
You have to change your I guess your Facebook cover photo to be a giant circus tent so you can be part of the dark carnival.
Yes. Oh my god, I don't even know what it's about, but I love it.
Or just giant bottles of Faygo. That's it.
Giant bottles of Faygo.
Which, we'll end this on a completely unrelated note, but does anybody else remember when Faygo had the giant bottles? See, you guys don't measure in liters, so I don't know exactly what the...
Yeah, we do.
You do?
We do. 3 liters. They were
3 liters. Okay. 3 liters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, those were great.
Yeah, because yeah, we had
your money.
With the giant mouthpiece on there. But we used to go get them. It was like a dollar something for 3 liters, and as a kid, I was like, my parents were like, oh, let's get that. And I'm like, why? Like, it's crappy pop, but it's cheap. So we would get that. And then years later, I went to our dollar store here when we started getting Dollar Tree, because that was never in Canada until like the last 6 years or so. And they would carry a brand that we had never had up here called Shasta. And they had two and a half liter bottles. Same size of bottle, like top part, but it was just like a fatter bottle. And they had their own version of Tahiti Treat, which we couldn't get in Canada for years. So I was like, it was basically sugar death in a bottle, because if you were somebody like Alex who didn't think and downed an entire 2.5 liter bottle, that was like 3,000 calories or something like that of just pure liquid sugar. But yeah, like that's just what came to my mind when I think of the, like, the only good thing about Juggalos is that they spread the gospel of Faygo. And the only thing is, we got to get our, Mike, you and I have to get like contacts in the States to start sending us the diet stuff, because in Canada, you can't get diet Faygo except for the Coke, like the regular version of diet. In the States, I looked it up. Every single flavor they have has a sugar-free, zero-calorie diet version.
Hear that, Jen? You've got a mission the next time I see you.
Because for whatever reason, it's weird. Canada is more health conscious in general when it comes to food, but we don't have the variety of the diet drinks that you guys get in the States.
Oh.
That's because they ultimately don't care.
Yeah.
So but now that I've derailed the conversation.
Indeed. Thank you, Michael. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
So, if you guys have enjoyed this conversation and you'd like to contribute to it, you know how to get a hold of us on the social medias, or you can send us an email, feedback@alteredgeek.com or feedback@thisweekingeek.net. How can the good people find you on the social medias if you're so inclined?
If you want to find me and Alex, you can find us at This Week in Geek on Twitter. We typically respond fairly quickly. Our email, we also respond almost instantly, because me and Alex both never sleep, so emails are always responded to fairly quickly. And just look around. If you know where to look, we're there, so find us. Just don't be creepy.
That is kind of creepy how you mentioned it, though. Just find us.
Just find us.
It'll
stalk
be fun.
Me. In fact, don't
we'll
stalk
find,
me.
We'll find you.
You don't find us. We'll find you.
I can just be found on Facebook. Aaron Pollier on Facebook.
So until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.
Whoop, whoop.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. see club for details.